Chapter 42. Falma. Nynaeve pressed Elaine back into the narrow alleyway between a cloth merchant's shop and a potter's works as the pair of women linked by a silvery leash passed by, heading down the cobblestone street toward Falma Harbor. They did not dare allow that pair to come too close. The people in the street made way for those two even more quickly than they did for Shan Chan soldiers or the occasional noble's palanquin, thickly curtained now that the days were cold. Even the street artists did not offer to draw them in chalks or pencils, although they pestered everyone else. Nynaeve's mouth tightened as her eyes followed the Suldam and the Domani through the crowd. Even after weeks in the town, the sight sickened her. Perhaps it sickened her more now. She could not imagine doing that to any woman, not even Moiraine or Leandrin. Well, maybe Leandrin, she admitted sourly. Sometimes at night in the small, smelly room the two of them had rented above a fishmonger, she thought of what she would like to do to Leandrin when she got her hands on her. Leandrin even more than Suroth. More than once she had been shocked at her own cruelty, even while she was delighted at her inventiveness. Still trying to keep the pair in sight, her eye fell on a bony man well down the street before the shifting throng hid him again. She had only a flash of a big nose and a narrow face. He wore a rich bronze velvet robe of Shan Chen cut over his clothes, but she thought that he was no Shan Chen, though the servant following him was, and a servant of high degree, with one temple shaved. The local people had not taken to Shan Chen fashions, particularly that one. That looked like Padan Fane, she thought incredulously. It couldn't be. Not here.
Nynaeve, Elaine said softly. Could we move on now? That fellow selling apples is looking at his table as if he's thinking he had more a few moments ago, and I would not want him wondering what I have in my pockets.
They both wore long coats made of sheepskin, with the fleece turned in and bright red spirals embroidered across the breast. It was country garb, but it passed well enough in Falma, where many people had come in from the farms and villages. Among so many strangers, the two of them had been able to sink in unnoticed. Nynaeve had combed out her braid, and her gold ring, the serpent eating its own tail, now nestled under her dress beside Lan's heavy ring on the leather cord around her neck. The large pockets of Elaine's coat bulged suspiciously.
"You stole those apples?"
Nynaeve hissed quietly, pulling Elaine out into the crowded street.
"Elaine, we don't have to steal. Not yet, anyway."
"No? How much money do we have left? You have been not hungry very often at mealtimes the last few days."
"Well, I am not hungry," Nynaeve snapped, trying to ignore the hollow in her middle.
Everything cost considerably more than she had expected. She had heard local people complaining about how prices had risen since the Shan Chen came. "Give me one of those." The apple Elaine dug out of her pocket was small and hard, but it crunched with a delicious sweetness when Nynaeve bit into it. She licked the juice from her lips.
"How did you manage to—"
She jerked Elaine to a halt and peered into her face.
Did you—
She could not think of a way to say it with so many streaming by, but Elaine understood.
"Only a little. I made that stack of old melons with the soft spots fall, and when he started putting them back—"
She did not even have the grace, as Nynaeve saw it, to blush or look embarrassed. Unconcernedly eating one of the apples, she shrugged.
"There is no need to frown at me like that. I looked carefully to make sure there was no Domani close," she sniffed. "If I were being held prisoner, I would not help my captors find other women to enslave. Although the way these Falmen behave, you would think they were lifelong servants of those who should be their enemies to the death."
She looked around, openly contemptuous at the people hurrying by. It was possible to follow the path of any Shan Chen, even common soldiers and even at a distance, by the ripples of bowing.
"They should resist. They should fight back."
"How? Against that?" They had to step to the side of the street along with everyone else as a Shan Chen patrol neared, climbing from the direction of the harbor. Nynaeve managed the bow, hands on knees, with face schooled to a perfect smoothness. Elaine was slower and made her bow with a distasteful twist of her mouth. There were 20 armored men and women in the patrol riding horses, for which Nynaeve was grateful.
She could not become used to seeing people riding things that looked like bronze-scaled, tailless cats, and a rider on one of the flying beasts was always enough to make her feel dizzy. She was glad there were so few of them. Still, two leashed creatures trotted along with the patrol, like wingless birds with coarse leather skin and sharp beaks, higher above the cobblestones than the helmeted heads of the soldier. Their long, sinewy legs looked as if they could run faster than any horse. She straightened slowly after the Shan Chan were gone. Some of those who had bowed for the patrol came close to running. No one was comfortable at the sight of the Shan Chan's beasts except the Shan Chan themselves. "Elaine," she said softly as they resumed their climb, "if we are caught, I swear that before they kill us or do whatever they do, I will beg them on bended knees to let me stripe you from top to bottom with the stoutest switch I can find. If you still can't learn to be careful, maybe it's time to think about sending you back to Tar Valon, or home to Camelin, or anywhere but here."
"I am careful. At least I looked to be sure there was no Damani close by. What about you? I have seen you channel with one in plain sight."
"I made sure they weren't looking at me," Nynaeve muttered. She had had to ball up all her anger at women being chained like animals to manage it. "And I only did it once, and it was only a trickle."
"A trickle? We had to spend 3 days hiding in our room breathing fish while they searched the town for whoever had done it. Do you call that being careful?"
"I had to know if there was a way to unfasten those collars." She thought there was. She would have to test one more collar at least before she was certain, and she was not looking forward to it. She had thought, like Elaine, that the Domani must all be prisoners eager to escape, but it had been the woman in the collar who raised the cry. A man pushing a barrow that bumped over the cobblestones passed by, crying his services to sharpen scissors and knives. "They should resist anyhow," Elaine growled. "They act as if they do not see anything that happens around them, if there's a Shan Chan in it." Nynaeve only sighed. It did not help that she thought Elaine was at least partly right. At first she had thought some of the Falman's submission, at least, must be a pose, but she had found no evidence of any resistance at all. She had looked at first, hoping to find help in freeing Egwene and Min, but everyone took fright at the merest hint that they might oppose the Shan Chan, and she stopped asking before she drew the wrong sort of attention. In truth, she could not imagine how the people could fight. Monsters and Aes Sedai. How can you fight monsters and Aes Sedai? Ahead stood 5 tall stone houses, among the largest in the town, all together making up a block. One street short of them, Nynaeve found an alleyway beside a tailor's shop, where they could keep an eye on some of the tall houses' entrances, at least. It was not possible to see every door at once. She did not want to risk letting Elaine go off on her own to watch more, but it was not wise to go any closer. Above the rooftops on the next street, the golden hawk banner of the High Lord Turak flapped in the wind. Only women went in or out of those houses, and most of those were Suldam, alone or with Damani in tow. The buildings had been taken over by the Shan Chan to house the Damani. Egwene had to be in there, and likely Min. They'd found no sign of Min so far, though it was possible she was as hidden by the crowds as they. Nynaeve had heard many tales of women and girls being seized on the streets or brought in from the villages. They all went into those houses, and if they were seen again, they wore a collar. Settling herself on a crate beside Elaine, she dug into the other woman's coat for a handful of the small apples. There were fewer local folk in the streets here. Everyone knew what the houses were, and everyone avoided them, just as they avoided the stables where the Shan Chan kept their beasts. It was not difficult to keep an eye on the doors through spaces between the passers-by. Just 2 women stopping for a bite. Just 2 more people who could not afford to eat at an inn. Nothing to attract more than a passing glance. Eating mechanically, Nynaeve tried once more to plan. Being able to open the collar, if she really could, did no good at all unless she could reach Egwene. The apples did not taste so sweet anymore. From the narrow window of her tiny room under the eaves, one of a number roughly walled together from whatever had been there before, Egwene could see the garden where Damani were being walked by their Suldam. It had been several gardens before the Shanchen knocked down the walls that separated them and took the big houses to keep their Damani. The trees were all but leafless, but the Damani were still taken out for air, whether they wanted it or not. Egwene watched the garden because Renna was down there talking with another Suldam, and as long as she could see Renna, then Renna was not going to enter and surprise her. Some other Suldam might come. There were many more Suldam than Damani, and every Suldam wanted her turn wearing a bracelet. They called it being complete. But Renna still had charge of her training, and it was Renna who wore her bracelet 4 times out of 5. If anyone came, they would find no impediment to entering. There were no locks on the doors of Damani's rooms. Egwene's room held only a hard, narrow bed, a washstand with a chipped pitcher and bowl, one chair and a small table, but it had no room for more. Damani had no need of comfort or privacy or possessions. Damani were possessions. Min had a room just like this in another house, but Min could come and go as she would, or almost as she would. Shanchen were great ones for rules. They had more for everyone than the White Tower did for novices. Egwene stood far back from the window. She did not want any of the women below to look up and see the glow that she knew surrounded her as she channeled the one power, probing delicately at the collar around her neck, searching futilely. She could not even tell whether the band was woven or made of links. Sometimes it seemed one, sometimes the other. But it seemed all of a piece all the time. It was only a tiny trickle of the power, the merest drip that she could imagine, but it still beaded sweat on her face and made her stomach clench. That was one of the properties of the Eidam. If a Damani tried to channel without a Suldam wearing her bracelet, she felt sick, and the more of the power she channeled, the sicker she became. Lighting a candle beyond the reach of her arm would have made Egwene vomit. Once Renna had ordered her to juggle her tiny balls of light with the bracelet lying on the table. Remembering still made her shudder. Now the silver leash snaked across the bare floor and up the unpainted wooden wall to where the bracelet hung on a peg. The sight of it hanging there made her jaws clench with fury. A dog leashed so carelessly could have run away. If a Damani moved her bracelet as much as a foot from where it had last been touched by a Suldam, Renna had made her do that, too, had made her carry her own bracelet across the room, or try to. She was sure it had only been minutes before the Suldam snapped the bracelet firmly on her own wrist, but to Egwene the screaming and the cramps that had her writhing on the floor had seemed to go on for hours. Someone tapped at the door, and Egwene jumped before she realized it could not be a Suldam. None of them would knock first. She let Saidar go anyway. She was beginning to feel decidedly ill. Min? Here I am for my weekly visit, Min announced as she slipped inside and shut the door. Her cheeriness sounded a little forced, but she always did what she could to keep Egwene's spirits up. How do you like it? She spun in a little circle, showing off her dark green wool dress of Shanchan cut. A heavy matching cloak hung over her arm. There was even a green ribbon catching up her dark hair, though her hair was hardly long enough for it. Her knife was still in its sheath at her waist, though. Egwene had been surprised when Min first showed up wearing it, but it seemed the Shanchan trusted everyone until they broke a rule. It's pretty, Egwene said cautiously. But why? I haven't gone over to the enemy, if that is what you were thinking. It was this or else find some place to stay out in the town and maybe not be able to visit you again. She started to straddle the chair as she would have in breeches, gave a wry shake of her head, and turned it around to sit. Everyone has a place in the pattern, she mimicked, and the place of everyone must be readily apparent. That old hag Mulain apparently got tired of not knowing what my place was on site and decided I ranked with the serving girls. She gave me the choice. You should see some of the things Shanchan serving girls wear, the ones who serve the lords. It might be fun, but not unless I was betrothed, or better yet, married. Well, there's no going back. Not yet, anyway. Mulain burned my coat and breeches. Grimacing to show what she thought of that, she picked up a rock from a small pile on the table and bounced it from hand to hand. It isn't so bad, she said with a laugh, except that it has been so long since I wore skirts that I keep tripping over them. Egwene had had to watch her clothes being burned too, including that lovely green silk. It had made her glad she had not brought more of the clothes the Lady Amalisa had given her, though she might never see any of them or the White Tower again. What she had on now was the same dark gray all Damani wore.
"Damani have no possessions," it had been explained to her. "The dress a Damani wears, the food she eats, the bed she sleeps in, are all gifts from her Suldam. If a Suldam chooses that a Damani sleep on the floor instead of in a bed or in a stall in a stable, it is purely the choice of the Suldam."
Mulain, who had charge of the Damani quarters, had a droning nasal voice, but she was sharp with any Damani who did not remember every word of her boring lectures. "I don't think there will be any going back for me ever," Egwene said, sighing, sinking down on her bed. She gestured to the rocks on the table. "Rena gave me a test yesterday. I picked out the piece of iron ore and the copper ore blindfolded every time she mixed them up. She left them all here to remind me of my success. She seems to think it was some kind of reward to be reminded. It doesn't seem any worse than the rest, not nearly as bad as making things explode like fireworks. But couldn't you have lied? Told her you didn't know which was which?" "You still do not know what this is like." Egwene tugged at the collar. Pulling did no more good than channeling had. "When Rena is wearing that bracelet, she knows what I am doing with the power and what I am not. Sometimes she even seems to know when she isn't wearing it. She says Suldam develop an affinity, she calls it, after a while." She sighed. "No one even thought to test me on this earlier. Earth is one of the five powers that was strongest in men. When I picked out those rocks, she took me outside the town and I was able to point right to an abandoned iron mine. It was all overgrown and there wasn't any opening to be seen at all, but once I knew how, I could feel the iron ore still in the ground. There hasn't been enough to make it worth working in 100 years, but I knew it was there. I couldn't lie to her, Min. She knew I had sensed the mine as soon as I did. She was so excited she promised me a pudding with my supper." She felt her cheeks growing hot in anger and embarrassment. "Apparently," she said bitterly, "I am now too valuable to be wasted making things explode. Any Damani can do that. Only a handful can find ores in the ground. Light, I hate making things explode, but I wish that was all I could do." The color in her cheeks deepened. She did hate it, making trees tear themselves to splinters and the earth erupt. That was meant for battle, for killing, and she wanted no part of it. Yet anything the Shan Chan let her do was another chance to touch Sayidar, to feel the power flowing through her. She hated the things Rena and the other Suldam made her do, but she was sure that she could handle much more of the power now than she could before leaving Tar Valon. She certainly knew she could do things with it that no sister in the tower had ever thought of doing. They never thought of tearing the earth apart to kill men. "Perhaps you won't have to worry about any of it much longer," Min said, grinning. "I've found us a ship, Egwene. The captain has been held here by the Shan Chen, and he is about ready to sail with or without permission." "If he will take you, Min, go with him," Egwene said wearily. "I told you I'm valuable now. Rena says in a few days they're sending a ship back to Shan Chen, just to take me." Min's grin vanished and they stared at each other. Suddenly, Min hurled her rock at the pile on the table, scattering them. "There has to be a way out of here. There has to be a way to take that bloody thing off your neck." Egwene leaned her head back against the wall. "You know the Shan Chen have collected every woman they've been able to find who can channel even a speck. They come from all over, not just from here in Falma, but from the fishing villages and from farming towns inland. Taraboner and Damani women, passengers off ships they've stopped. There are 2 Aes Sedai among them." "Aes Sedai?" Min exclaimed. By habit, she looked around to make sure no Shan Chen had overheard her saying that name. "Egwene, if there are Aes Sedai here, they can help us. Let me talk to them and—" "They can't even help themselves, Min. I only talked to one. Her name is Rima. The Suldam don't call her that, but that's her name. She wanted to make sure I knew it, and she told me there is another. She told me in between bouts of tears. She's Aes Sedai, and she was crying, Min. She has a collar on her neck. They make her answer to Pura, and she can't do anything more about it than I can. They captured her when Falma fell. She was crying because she's beginning to stop fighting against it, because she cannot take being punished anymore. She was crying because she wants to take her own life, and she cannot even do that without permission. Light, I know how she feels. Min shifted uneasily, smoothing her dress with suddenly nervous hands.
Egwene, you don't want to...
Egwene, you must not think of harming yourself. I will get you out somehow. I will.
I'm not going to kill myself, Egwene said dryly. Even if I could.
Let me have your knife. Come on, I won't hurt myself. Just hand it to me. Min hesitated before slowly taking her knife from its sheath at her waist. She held it out warily, obviously ready to leap if Egwene tried anything.
Egwene took a deep breath and reached for the hilt. A soft quiver ran through the muscles of her arm. As her hand came within a foot of the knife, a cramp suddenly contorted her fingers. Eyes fixed, she tried to force her hand closer. The cramp seized her whole arm, knotting muscles to her shoulder. With a groan, she sank back, rubbing her arm and concentrating her thoughts on not touching the knife. Slowly, the pain began to lessen.
Min stared at her incredulously. What? I don't understand.
Damani are not allowed to touch a weapon of any kind. She worked her arm, feeling the tightness go. Even our meat is cut for us. I don't want to hurt myself, but I could not if I did want to. No Damani is ever left alone where she might jump from a height, that window is nailed shut, or throw herself in a river.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, oh, I don't know what I mean. If you could jump in a river, you might escape.
Egwene went on dully, as if the other woman had not spoken.
They are training me, Min. The Suldam and the Aedam are training me. I cannot touch anything I even think of as a weapon. A few weeks ago, I considered hitting Renna over the head with that pitcher, and I could not pour wash water for 3 days. Once I'd thought of it that way, I not only had to stop thinking about hitting her with it, I had to convince myself I would never, under any circumstances, hit her with it before I could touch it again. She knew what had happened, told me what I had to do, and would not let me wash anywhere except with that pitcher and bowl. You are lucky it happened between your visiting days. Renna made sure I spent those days sweating from the time I woke to the time I fell asleep exhausted. I am trying to fight them, but they are training me as surely as they're training Pura.
She clapped a hand to her mouth, moaning through her teeth.
Her name is Rima. I have to remember her name, not the name they've put on her. She is Rima, and she's Yellow Aja, and she has fought them as long and as hard as she could. It is no fault of hers that she hasn't the strength left to fight any longer. I wish I knew who the other sister is that Rima mentioned. I wish I knew her name. Remember both of us, Min. Rima of the Yellow Aja and Egwene Alvir. Not Egwene the Damani. Egwene Alvir of Emmons Field. Will you do that?
Stop it, Min snapped. You stop it right this instant. If you get shipped off to Shanchen, I'll be right there with you.
But I don't think you will. You know I've read you, Egwene. I don't understand most of it. I almost never do. But I see things I am sure link you to Rand and Perrin and Matt and... Yes, even Galad, the light help you for a fool. How can any of that happen if the Shanchan take you off across the ocean?
Maybe they're going to conquer the whole world, Min. If they conquer the world, there's no reason Rand and Galad and the rest could not end up in Shanchan.
You ninny-headed goose!
I am being practical, Egwene said sharply. I don't intend to stop fighting, not as long as I can breathe, but I don't see any hope that I'll ever have the Aedam off me either. Just as I don't see any hope that anyone is going to stop the Shanchen. Min, if this ship captain will take you, go with him. At least then one of us will be free.
The door swung open and Renna stepped in. Egwene jumped to her feet and bowed sharply, as did Min. The tiny room was crowded for bowing, but Shanchen insisted on protocol before comfort.
Your visiting day, is it? Renna said. I had forgotten. Well, there is training to be done even on visiting days.
Egwene watched sharply as the Suldam took down the bracelet, opened it, and fastened it again around her wrist. She could not see how it was done. If she could have probed with the one power, she would have, but Renna would have known that immediately. As the bracelet closed around Renna's wrist, a look came onto the Suldam's face that made Egwene's heart sink.
"You have been channeling."
Renna's voice was deceptively mild. There was a spark of anger in her eyes.
"You know that is forbidden except when we are complete."
Egwene wet her lips.
"Perhaps I have been too lenient with you. Perhaps you believe that because you are valuable now, you will be allowed license. I think I made a mistake letting you keep your old name. I had a kitten called Tuli when I was a child. From now on, your name is Tuli. You will go now, Min. Your visiting day with Tuli is ended."
Min hesitated only long enough for one anguished look at Egwene before leaving. Nothing Min could say or do would do anything except make matters worse, but Egwene could not help looking longingly at the door as it closed behind her friend. Renna took the chair, frowning at Egwene.
"I must punish you severely for this. We will both be called to the court of the Nine Moons, you for what you can do, I as your Suldam and trainer, and I will not allow you to disgrace me in the eyes of the Empress. I will stop when you tell me how much you love being Damani, and how obedient you will be after this. And Tuli, make me believe every word."